B. Collins.
Peter B. Collins News and Comment. It's Friday, June 15th, 2018. As I predicted yesterday, both sides are cherry-picking elements of the Justice Department Inspector General's report about the FBI investigation into those damn emails of Hillary Clinton, as Bernie said in the debate. And typically, Trump just cherry-picks a couple of lines and decides that this is universal exoneration, or in Catholic terms, absolution. And he claims falsely that the report shows how the FBI was just so biased against him, and James Comey led that effort. That, hey, I didn't do anything wrong ever. And, of course, it is flatly untrue. The investigation that the Inspector General did has very little to do with Robert Mueller. Mueller is not connected to the Michael Cohen investigation. There's been a move in the Paul Manafort investigation, but it doesn't affect the charges of collusion between Trump and Russia. And so what we have here is a feeding frenzy where there really aren't any rules. It's kind of a scrum, and you just pick a point and claim that it reflects that you've always been right. So let's start with the Trump side. Trump claims that Peter Strzok, by sending that text message to his secret paramour, Lisa Page, that will stop Trump, that's about all he needs to know, that the entire FBI hierarchy was against him. And we don't have any evidence to support such a sweeping claim. So today, he was riding high, or maybe he was just high, and he went on offense with attacks on the FBI, congressional Democrats, Barack Obama, Hillary Clinton, Justin Trudeau of Canada, football players, the media, the special counsel, even as he patted himself on the back for his brilliant negotiation in Singapore and the visionary trade war that he insists on starting with China. So he says this report from the Inspector General Horowitz exposed what he called the scum on the top of the FBI. They're total thieves. And he insisted that Peter Strzok, the FBI agent whose private comments said they would stop Trump, should be fired. And that may happen. Jeff Sessions can order Christopher Wray, the latest FBI director, to do that. And I wouldn't be surprised if it happens. And Trump was in his... The way the guy talks is so frustrating because he repeats himself. He gets a phrase that he likes. He says it over and over again. The end result, he said, of the IG's report was wrong. I mean, there was total bias. I mean, when you look at Peter Strzok and what he said about me, when you look at Comey, all his moves, you know, it was interesting. It was a pretty good report. Then I say that the IG blew it at the very end with that statement, referring to the one that there was no evidence of bias in the decisions that were made as part of the investigation and the decision not to prosecute Hillary and the decision to proceed with an investigation into Trump over the Russia issues. Trump says Peter Strzok should have been fired a long time ago. Others should have been fired. There are five unnamed people in the IG report. We don't have the details. I haven't had a chance to read the full report, so I haven't seen anybody tease out any information on who those five people are or what offensive comments they were reported to have said. And here we get to the part that I don't buy from the Inspector General. He found no evidence that the FBI did anything to stop Trump or rig the investigation into Mrs. Clinton in her favor. In fact, the report's criticisms of Comey and the Bureau's conduct focused on actions that damaged Clinton, not Trump, and it deemed the decision not to prosecute her a reasonable one. And this is where I call time out. Because there were significant issues about the origins of her private server for email, Her whole intention was clearly to avoid Freedom of Information Act requests down the line. And when that didn't plant, that little ruse didn't play out, suddenly Hillary was for full transparency except the 30,000 personal emails that were deleted by her lawyers before they forwarded the rest of them back to the State Department. And we find out in this report that James Comey occasionally used a Gmail account. He says it was only incidental and that he always forwarded it back to his government account so there was a FOIA traceable record of those transmissions. I can't prove that. I'll take Comey's word for it. But it is damn embarrassing that he used a private email after being at the center of the controversy excoriating Clinton for essentially the same issue. Now, they are different because Comey didn't set up his own server in a bathroom or the basement of his home and try to cover it up. But the optics of it clearly don't help Comey at this point. So the report dealt only with the handling of the investigation into Clinton, and as I pointed out yesterday, by avoiding the content of the emails, the quid pro quos, the sleazy relationships between the Clinton Foundation and Cheryl Mills and Huma Abedin working for Clinton on the State Department payroll. Those were not examined. And we get this sweeping claim that, oh, you know, Comey was right, that there was nothing to prosecute there. However, of course, he did slam Comey for what was called insubordination for announcing that. And that really plays into the vacuum that I described yesterday with the Attorney General Loretta Lynch. And she should have been fired or suspended after the tarmac Phoenix meeting with Bill Clinton. That was inexcusable, and it created the perception of a clear conflict of interest. And just like Obama didn't fire Clapper after he publicly testified falsely under oath, he perjured himself. With the clock running on the end of the administration, Obama didn't take any action against Loretta Lynch. In other comments from Trump today, he gave an interview to Fox and Friends out in front of the White House, and then he talked to other reporters on the White House driveway. And here's one of those annoying patterns of speech of his. He's talking about the blowback from his comment at the G7 that, gosh, Russia should be here. And the reporters pointed out that the official record shows that Russia improperly took control of Crimea, that they invaded Ukraine. And, of course, I don't see it that way. I am not completely convinced that Russia was involved in the shootdown of MH17, and these are the most common infractions, if you will, that are used to justify the isolation of Russia in recent years. But Trump rewrites history. He doesn't blame Putin for, again, the narrative that Putin improperly took control of Crimea and the Russian naval base at Sevastopol. Trump said President Obama lost Crimea because Putin didn't respect President Obama. President Obama lost Crimea because President Putin didn't respect President Obama. I think I said that twice. I guess he said it twice. Didn't respect our country and didn't respect Ukraine. President Obama, not Trump. When it's my fault, I'll tell you. Well, we know that is a complete lie. And this is just how compulsive a liar Trump happens to be. Then he blames Democrats in Congress for federal authorities separating children from parents trying to cross the border from Mexico. I hate the children being taken away, he said. The Democrats have to change their law. That's their law. Well, duh, the Republicans have been in charge for quite a while. If somebody wants to change a bad Democratic law that is separating families, that's not true to begin with, but this whole thing is just completely separated from reality. When asked about the embattled Scott Pruitt, he said, well, I'm not happy about certain things, referring to, what, 12, 14 different claims of corruption against him now? But I'm not happy about certain things, but he's done a fantastic job running the EPA, which is very overriding. So that's a bizarre little view into Trump's bizarre brain today. And continuing on day two of the Inspector General's report, one of the interesting things I note is that it does indirectly support the rationale of the Rod Rosenstein memo that was generated overnight after Trump decided to fire Jim Comey as FBI director. And the memo, of course, was immediately kind of replaced by Trump's comments to Lester Holt of NBC that he had fired Comey over the Russia investigation. And at some point, there may be a court test of that or some other evaluation from the Mueller investigation. But it is fair to say that this Inspector General report is pretty consistent with the allegations that were drummed up by Rod Rosenstein to create the pretext for firing Jim Comey. So it comes in a circle. And the line that I quoted yesterday from the IG report, mistakes were made. And that is the way you blame an institution without holding any individuals accountable. And I find it infuriating. Now, Horowitz scrutinized Comey's July press conference when the FBI director called Clinton's email habits extremely careless, but said the FBI wouldn't recommend that she be prosecuted because their investigation showed no crimes were committed. And as I've said, I dispute that. Comey hid his plans for that press conference from his superiors at the Justice Department and instructed other FBI officials to conceal them as well, according to the report, and that's what Horowitz called extraordinary and insubordinate behavior, and found that none of Comey's reasons were formed a persuasive basis for deviating from well-established department policies. And likewise, I have serious questions about what's been reported by the Inspector General that the New York FBI office delayed for almost a month, from September 29th until nearly the end of October, opening up Anthony Weiner's laptop to find out exactly which of Hillary Clinton's emails had landed there. And we need to know why that happened. Were they slow-walking the investigation, hoping to drag it out past the election so that nothing surprising could occur for the expected winner of the 2016 election? And a quote from Comey's book that is germane here, "It's entirely possible that because I was making decisions in an environment where Hillary Clinton was sure to be the next president, my concern about making her an illegitimate president by concealing the restarted investigation bore greater weight than it would have if the election appeared closer or if Trump were ahead in the polls." Now, first of all, Comey should have been smart enough to know, like I predicted, that Trump could win because of the disaffection for Hillary Clinton. Didn't involve Russians sowing division. There are plenty of Americans who hated Hillary Clinton and could not vote for her. And you combine that with the array of comprehensive voter suppression tactics that were effective for the Republicans. None of that ever gets mentioned. More from the IG report. They said they did not find documentary or testimonial evidence that improper considerations, including political bias, directly affect the specific investigative actions we reviewed. And Lisa Page, the lawyer who was secretly communicating with her secret boyfriend, Peter Strzok, she said that they texted on their work phones instead of personal ones to keep our affair a secret from our spouses. Now, both of those are pretty boneheaded moves. Trying to have an affair and expecting that by using your work phones you can keep it concealed. And so, let's look at what Hillary would say. This is channeled through Jill Abramson, former New York Times editor and a big friend of Hillary. And she writes that the FBI under Comey was a ship of fools and that he cost Clinton the election. She writes, "The worst, sleaziest parts of the horrible, sleazy 2016 presidential campaign came roaring back on Thursday like a nightmare." Now, when she mentions sleazy, the first thing I think of is Hillary Clinton's millions of dollars of fees collected from corporate speeches, including the Wall Street speeches that Bernie chided her about throughout the debates. When I hear sleazy, I think of the way the Democrats laundered money through the Hillary Victory Fund and used it inappropriately in the primary campaigns. When I hear sleazy, I think about the way they rigged the primaries against Bernie Sanders, both through DNC internal actions and by lying about him during the campaign. That's what I think about when I hear sleazy, but that's not what Jill Abramson hears. She says she's written previously about how Comey's bad actions in the email case probably cost Hillary the election. And the IG's report, she says, certainly confirms his many flawed actions and decisions. But she doesn't mention election fraud. It's all Comey's fault. This election was going to be Hillary's. It was going to be a squeaker. But because of Comey. Now, I agree that his moves starting in July were questionable. I don't think he should have exonerated Hillary then. And when he reopened the case in October, it was messy. But I do accept in general his point of view that he was in a lose-lose situation and he chose the less painful of the options available to him. But Abramson says Jim Comey is a singular villain. Though the IG report states he had no political motive, he upended the 2016 election and all but destroyed Clinton's candidacy. Now, this is the kind of rewriting of history. The rationalization that comes out of deep identity politics. Jill Abramson believed that Hillary Clinton was ordained, if not by God, by some mystical force, and was entitled to be the next president. She doesn't mention what a shitty campaign she ran, how she failed to cut through when Trump mesmerized the media with his daily hate-filled, divisive, and distracting statements. I mean, there were so many failings of the Clinton campaign, and it's all Comey's fault now. And St. Jim took an op-ed in today's New York Times to claim that while he disagrees with a few elements of the IG report, he basically accepts it, and he thinks this is good for strengthening the FBI. First, he says, the Inspector General's team went through the FBI's work with a microscope, found no evidence that bias or improper motivation affected the investigation, which I know was done competently, honestly, and independently. The report also resoundingly demonstrates there was no prosecutorial case against Mrs. Clinton as we had concluded. Well, Jim, my bullshit detector's gone off already. Then here's the part that I'm sympathetic to. After Loretta Lynch announced she would not recuse herself from the Clinton email investigation and would rely instead primarily on my recommendation, I chose to do something unprecedented. That's the July 2016 announcement. And he says that if she had made the announcement, it would have done corrosive damage to public faith in the investigation and the institutions of justice. Well, why didn't you indict her, Jim? Or at least refer her to her Justice Department for investigation and prosecution. And when Comey gets to the end of his op-ed, he moves into fictional blather about and platitudes about American justice. He writes, the Inspector General's office has now reached a conclusion. Its detailed report should serve to both protect and build the reservoir of trust and credibility necessary for the Department of Justice and the FBI to remain strong and independent. I'm sorry. That reservoir has been empty for a long time, Jim Comey. And his final sentences, our nation's institutions of justice are up to the task of protecting the rule of law and defending truth and transparency. All of us should stand up and support them. Sorry, Jim. You never should have been nominated as FBI director in the first place. You were a Republican chosen by a Democratic president, and you had a sketchy record. Your only moment of courage was at John Ashcroft's hospital bedside when you refused to extend the NSA program that was later extended anyway. And just to add to it, Obama never should have held over Bob Mueller for an extra 2 years. Before he then made the bad choice of Jim Comey as his replacement as FBI director. So yesterday we covered both the IG report and the lawsuit from the Attorney General of the state of New York over Trump's illegal management of the Trump Foundation. It's very clear he's been caught red-handed in violations that anybody who's worked in a nonprofit or a foundation knows are obvious. And what's amazing is, despite that, he's able to tweet out sleazy New York Democrats are responsible for this lawsuit. I won't settle this case, says Trump. Now, here's a case where he's obviously broken the law. It's apparent to anybody who objectively looks at it. But his Twitter followers are going to believe the dear tweeter's claims. And those evil Democrats and the media, fake news, all that stuff. I mean, this is real, it's solid, it's substantial. But many of his loyalists will refuse to accept that. And that's why we're stuck with this guy. The judge in one of the two Paul Manafort prosecutions has revoked his bail and sent him to jail as he awaits trial later this year. Prosecutors working for Mueller filed two new counts of obstruction of justice against Manafort last week and asked that the bail be revoked because he had committed new crimes trying to tamper with potential witnesses in one of the cases. And it has to do with this phony center that he set up in Europe, the Habsburg Center or whatever it's called, Habsburg Group. And he recruited former political leaders from Europe to front for the Yanukovych government and to vouch for them. And Manafort was trying to coach them not to say that he lobbied in the United States or that they did, because that's one of the charges that he's trying to wriggle out of. So Manafort, just like Trump on the foundation, prima facie evidence shows that he is guilty. And, of course, Mueller is trying to use ancient history of his tax evasion and his lies about Yanukovych to try to flip him into cooperating in the Trump-Russia investigation. So we'll see where that goes, but it's not a good day for Paul Manafort. If you like trade wars, you should be delighted because Trump has lit the fuse, and by July 6th, we will officially be at war with China over trade. They announced today that we'll move ahead with tariffs of $50 billion on Chinese imports, tariffs of 25% on roughly $34 billion of Chinese products, and new tariffs on roughly $16 billion of other products are in the pipeline now. And China has said they will reply with equivalent tariffs on American goods imported to China, and that all of the economic and trade achievements previously negotiated by the two countries will be invalid. So this is going to have far-reaching implications. And last night on the Public Television News Hour, they had a pretty good package about how the tariffs on washing machines have improved the margins for the American manufacturer. I think it's the last manufacturer of washing machines, Whirlpool. But Whirlpool is seeing an increase in the raw materials they use to make those American-made washing machines. So they're going to have to increase the price. And so what we have here is tit-for-tat, tariff additions, and the real loser is the American consumer. Because the cost of a Samsung washing machine imported from South Korea is going to be about the same as a Whirlpool machine made in the United States, and they will both be about 25% higher than they were last month. The crimp in the supply lines due to the tariffs is going to lead to layoffs and disruption in manufacturing timelines. Trump believes this is all survivable. It's basically caused the gains in the stock market from the first of this year to evaporate. And I'm very concerned about this reckless effort and the implications that most people so far are oblivious to. We're learning now a little background. You remember Trump went to Quebec and he infuriated everybody he came late and left early for the G7 summit. And then, of course, he's still attacking Justin Trudeau a week later. But he said he had to leave Quebec because he was on his way to Singapore. And when he got to Singapore, he got bored. He didn't have anything to do because he arrived on Sunday, local time, and the meeting was not scheduled to start until Monday, local time, Tuesday, our time. And he said, well, let's move it up. Let's just get this thing going. And Sarah Huckabee Sanders had to say, well, you know, Don, if you do that, it won't be on television. Because nobody covers nothing on Sunday night in the United States anymore. And so he relented. The other thing we know is that everything that he signed off on, except perhaps the return of the remains of American soldiers from the Korean War, was all scripted, all written out in advance. Every day I pause for a second and thank the people who support my work here at the Peter B. Collins Podcast with your subscriptions. And today, I want to thank Sandra Fish. She just reorganized her subscriptions, and I appreciate your support, Sandra. There's Andrew Bodo, who just renewed his annual subscription. Faith Peoples, the ever, ever generous supporter. And Benny Alto, he has numerous subscriptions. That's why you hear his name fairly often here. I invite you to join in. I've been podcasting for 9 years now. Is that a milestone that would cause you to say, yeah, it's about time I kicked in a few bucks to Collins? Well, if you're ready, visit peterbcollins.com, find the menu tab, pull it down, click on Become a Subscriber. You land on the sign-up page, and boom, you can choose a level of support that's comfortable for you and your budget. And if you prefer to deal with me by the U.S. mail and avoid PayPal, I understand. My mailing address is Box 150, 660, San Rafael, California, 94915. That's Box 150, 660, San Rafael, 94915. Well, I want to tell you that I made a little shuffle in my release of in-depth interviews. I was unable to connect today with Pepe Escobar. He's in Bangkok to get his views on the Trump-Kim summit in Singapore and a few other issues. I'm trying to reschedule that for early next week. So I'm going to release today my in-depth interview with Patrick Martin, the Detroit-based reporter for the World Socialist website, who deserves credit for analyzing the field of Democratic challengers recruited to run for House seats this year. And he recaps how 20, about one-third of the Democratic nominees selected so far to contest competitive seats, 20 of them are either military veterans or intelligence veterans. And this is a creepy, creepy trend in the Democratic Party. Here's an excerpt from my conversation with Patrick Martin, where he sums up the numbers for you.
The subset that we're concerned about is the 80 or 90 seats that are, for the most part, held by Republicans, but which could swing in the case of an election.
Mm-hmm.
Because the Democratic Party is about as low as it can get in terms of, there are only about six, I think, seats that are considered to be up for grabs that are currently held by Democrats. The vast majority of the so-called competitive or swing seats are held by Republicans. And the question that we're discussing is, who is being selected to be the nominees of the Democratic Party in those 75, 80, or 90 seats? So far, about 60 of those nominees have been selected. And 20 of them, and I have a list, are from this category of former military.
Check out the full interview with Patrick Martin. It's available for subscribers today at peterbcollins.com, iTunes, TuneIn, Stitcher, and Spreaker. You may have seen some of the reporting. Finally, some reporters have been given a tour of the former Walmart superstore that's been converted to a prison for minors who are being held by the Immigration and Customs Enforcement team. There are 1,500 boys aged 10 to 17 who are locked up in a warehouse. They're allowed out for 2 hours a day, and they have been separated from their parents. I'm linking to the report from the New York Times, which gives a pretty good description of this facility. It's run by a nonprofit, and they have good intentions, but they've already had to expand their permit because they are holding more people than the facility was built for. And there are many shelters that are in this area. There have been at least 13 deficiency citations filed against this shelter at the former Walmart in Brownsville, Texas. And it is a grisly scene that we are witnessing. And Jeff Sessions, the lowlife who plays Attorney General in the Trump reality show, he had the temerity to quote the Bible as the reason for enforcing the law and separating families. He said all laws are ordained by God and that having children does not protect people from prosecution. I would cite you to the Apostle Paul in his clear and wise command in Romans 13 to obey the laws of the government because God has ordained them for the purpose of order. Well, he probably knows this. As a man with a clan inside, a Klansman inside, his inner Klansman, this is a passage that was used to defend slavery generations ago in the Deep South. And finally, we are seeing some religious leaders in this country raise objections and condemn the immigration policies that are separating families. But to cite Bob Corker, the senator from Tennessee, earlier this week, they're very careful not to poke the bear. So they oppose the policy, but not the people responsible for it, Trump and Sessions. You got Franklin Graham. He told Christian Broadcasting, I think it's disgraceful. It's terrible to see families ripped apart, and I don't support that one bit. But I blame the politicians for the last 20, 30 years that have allowed this to escalate to where it is today. Well, it's fair to blame people for 10 to 20, 30 years of inaction on immigration policy. But this is a new policy, and it doesn't have anything to do with the past. That is bullshit, Reverend Graham. A coalition of evangelical groups, including the National Association of Evangelicals, sent a letter to Trump on June 1st, pleading with him to protect the unity of families, not to close off all avenues to asylum for immigrants. The Southern Baptist Convention had a meeting in Dallas. They said they maintain a priority of family unity. And the Roman Catholic bishops opened a meeting in Fort Lauderdale with a strong statement from the group's president that cast asylum as a right-to-life issue. I'm a little uncomfortable with that being included in abortion politics, but that's the language that they chose to use. And on the driveway at the White House this morning, Trump said that he would not sign a compromise currently being negotiated among House Republicans that would give status to the Dreamers and would deal with a shift in the immigration system. But if it doesn't include funding for his wall, he will not approve it. And this just shows that what I've been discussing since last September, when Trump ended protection for Dreamers that Obama had imposed, that he made them hostages, and they are hostages to funding for that bloody southern border wall that Mexico will never pay for, and we know it. Immigration and Customs Enforcement is quietly getting the National Archives to change the rules so that they can destroy records related to sexual assaults, solitary confinement, and deaths of people in custody. They want to shorten the timelines for the destruction of these records, ranging from 20 years for sexual assault and death records to 3 years for reports about solitary confinement. The Apple company is tightening up security on iPhones, and this drives the FBI batty. What they're doing is planning an iPhone software update that would disable the phone's charging and data port. The lightning port on new phones. And it would lock the phone down after an hour. And this would prevent some of the techniques that have been used by the FBI to open suspect iPhones. I fully support this. We're entitled to this type of privacy and this prevention of government snooping into our private lives without a court order and a warrant. And it's St. Jim Comey, who paid over $1 million to crack the iPhone of the San Bernardino shooter. And they got nothing. A pro-Trump demonstrator who admitted hitting protesters at a far-right rally at the University of California at Berkeley last spring? Well, he is testifying against the Antifa activists who got into a fight with him in that skirmish. This is despite the fact that Daniel Quillinan, a conservative who came to the rally with Kyle Chapman, who is kind of a notorious figure in the alt-right, he came with a knife. Now, he's not accused of using the knife, but he did get into fights with people, and he whacked somebody with the pole of an American flag that he was carrying. And despite that, he is being used as a witness as they try to convict the people who got into a 15-second struggle with him. And last but not least today, you may have heard that the National Institutes of Health were running a study funded by $100 million from the booze industries to investigate whether alcohol, when you consume it on a modest level, is actually good for you. And this has been the focus of controversy for a year or so. And finally today, Dr. Francis Collins, director of the National Institutes of Health, has pulled the plug on this tainted study. So that means you can drink moderately this weekend and not have to worry about scientists telling you that you've been a bad boy or girl. Thanks for listening to my daily news and comment podcast. We give it away free. You're free to share it all over the place. And we post it on YouTube. Did you know? I'm Peter B.
Happy trails to you until we meet again. Happy trails.